somebody, anyone, to say hi. Tell them who you are. And tell the person next to you, try to encourage them, say one encouraging thing. As we need courage in this world just to get through. Say something encouraging to the person next to you. Thanks for being here. You're taking your time, I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, now you can stop encouraging. Don't you hate it when people encourage you like that? Isn't it like a total bummer, you know? Okay, and now let's try one other exercise. Just stand up for 1 second and test your balance. You can try to get your weight balanced on both feet and just feel how naturally you balance out. How are you doing that? It's kind of amazing, actually, that you can even stand up. Now stand on 1 foot to see how it goes. Careful, grab onto something or somebody. You made friends with somebody next to you for this purpose. Okay, put your foot back down. And now maybe go up on the other foot, stand up. Now close your eyes. There you go. You can come back down 2 feet. Which was harder, with your eyes open or eyes closed? Okay, let's sit back down. Also, if anybody wants to earn extra brownie points, you can move up closer. There's seats up here. I did take a bath 3 weeks ago, so don't be afraid. I'm also vegetarian. I haven't eaten anybody yet. Our ability to balance, to feel our 2 feet on the ground, is, you know, we can take it for granted, but it requires a lot of finesse, and there's a lot of aspects of our body working for that. We can also learn when we stand on 1 foot that there's a lot of twitching going on. We're never quite exactly in the center, but we're always pulling back to the center. This is balance. So if you ever feel like your life is going off to one side or another, it is. But the reason we have sessions like this is to talk about what the center is, to try to find what the center is. And the aspect of standing on 1 foot and then closing the eyes and then balancing, where we notice that it gets a little harder, is to prove also that when we have vision, we're able to see the goal in front of us and know the center of our lives and be really clear about it, then it's a lot easier to balance. Otherwise, we get thrown off this way or that way. Now, I was walking in a ravine. This was in Toronto, Canada. It's a beautiful place to walk near where I stay, near Avenue Road in Toronto. And I was going on this long hike with a friend. And behind us, I heard a single bell ring. Ching-ching. And before I noticed where the bell came from, in my mind's eye, I actually saw it. It was behind us. But I imagined a bicycle, because you may be used to hearing a bicycle bell. And now in my mind, I saw actually the form of the bicycle, and I actually saw in my mind the rider as well. And a few seconds later, there it was, the rider, and the person who rang the bell was very much like I had imagined in my mind. Not exactly, of course, but the form was there. And as I was studying the power of sound, which I do a lot, there's a lot to be known about sound and its power. I was thinking about this incident and how when we hear certain sounds, it brings natural forms into our minds, memories and so forth. Sound is very powerful. Sometimes a whole avalanche is started just by one single sound. There's an explosion or a pop, and then the avalanche starts. So sound can be the precursor to many incidents in our lives. In fact, if someone says something to you, like we've just decided to give you a promotion, those words suddenly change your outlook in life. Right? Possible? So today's topic which is turning on your transponder and realizing that we have an innate power to create sounds, and also we have choices of which sounds to listen to. And I'm going to make a case today of how consequential those two things are. The kinds of sounds we make and the kinds of sounds we subject ourselves to or choose to listen to. And starting off in a philosophical discussion like this, or let me say in a practical discussion, it's good to have a little basis in philosophy. So one of the aspects that all the yogic wisdom texts begin with is finding our center. Say, who are you? Now, let's do something practical today to try to discern who we are and get a better idea of our center. Do you all think that sounds like a good idea, even though you don't know what I'm talking about yet?
Yes.
Three people said yes. Anybody else feel a little bit, you know, daring today? Go ahead, just say yes.
Yes.
Live on the edge, right? Okay. So let's do a guided meditation to start with. And just let yourself go into this guided meditation. And what it's going to do is help you to look inwardly. It's a very simple thing, but it's not so easy to do. And the reason it's not so easy is because I'm used to looking outside. I'm looking at all the objects in the world and thinking, I need this, I don't need that, I wish this wasn't in my way, I wish I had that, but it's not with me. And constantly I'm thinking from one thing to the next, but when do I actually get a chance to look inwardly and explore what's there? So now we're going to take a little time to do that. And it'll just be like about 7 or 8 minutes, but we'll go on a little journey, and it's the closest thing to us, or I should say, you are the closest thing to you, and you live inside the body. How's that sound? Okay? All right. So, can you hear the drone behind? That's tuned to a C, and it's a tambura, albeit electrical, but it's meant to give a kind of calming effect, and you might notice that, can you hear it? Can't hear it back there? I'll give you a little more volume. How's that? So, find a comfortable sitting posture. Maybe it's the old trick of the yogis, sit slightly straighter than you were a second ago. And you'll notice that when you do that, your mind starts to come to attention. Close your eyes, because we're going to be looking inside, and we really don't need the eye function right now to look outwards or to look at anybody else or to look at me. And this is called focused attention training or meditation. And here, we're going to learn how to direct our attention, which I'll show later is the main asset that we have in life. We're also learn to become aware of when our mind has wandered away and how to redirect our focus. And finally, we're going to be aware of our awareness. Although that may sound circular, it's one of the objects of yoga meditation, is to become aware that you're aware, because I'm always conscious, even when I sleep, but I'm not conscious that I'm conscious. I'm sitting, simply letting myself go. So for a while, release yourself from all your responsibilities. Let those energies flow by you, and just be with your breathing. Bring your attention to your breath. To help stay focused on your breath, when you inhale, say mentally, in. And when you exhale, mentally say out. Become even more aware of your breath. Have some gratitude for it and think, each breath I take is the most important gift that I have. Now, you're walking on a soft, golden brown pathway with a tangle of green trees and flowers on either side. At the end of the pathway is a yellow door. As you push the door open, you are greeted by an expanse of soothing light. The light envelops you and you feel warm and safe. You've entered your inner world, the place in which you can taste the nectar of your own consciousness. Close the door to the outside world and just be fully present in your inner world. Remain unattached from any thoughts. You can observe them, but don't engage them. Be a dispassionate witness with no need or responsibility to react. Be aware of your breath. Now let gravity take your feet and legs and let them relax. Let go of your abdomen, your chest, and your rib cage. Let them relax. Let your back, shoulders, and neck relax. And let your head and face relax and breathe. Now, feel positively that you exist. Be aware that you're aware. And now, one after another, I'm going to ask you to bring your attention first to your hands. Be aware of your hands. Now, put your attention on your legs. Now move it to your head. Notice that you are the one looking at each of these, but they are not you. You're separate from the things that you're looking at. The seer and the seen are different. Now feel that you're not the body. See your thoughts and feel that you're not your thoughts. You're the observer of the thoughts. Now become aware that your power to hear, to touch, see, taste, smell, walk, speak, and digest are all inexplicable powers given to you. Now become aware of your intelligence. Notice how your intelligence gives you directions like those from an unseen expert who is always with you and available. Even when you sleep. The Yoga Sutras call this benevolent guide the Super Self. Please remain in this space and listen to a text from Yoga Wisdom. The sky, due to its subtle nature, does not mix with anything. Although it is all pervading, similarly, the spiritual essence situated in transcendental vision does not mix with the body, though it is situated in the body. Thus, knowing yourself to be a transcendental being, steady your mind by deliberate spiritual intelligence. Now I've tuned the electric tambura to a middle C, and hopefully it's a note reachable for you. And we're going to try a one-syllable mantra. We say the mantra, just let it resonate from your vocal cords and in your chest, and feel the vibration of the mantra in your mind and in your body. You don't have to judge it or intellectualize it, just let the sound carry you. This is a one-syllable mantra that is said to be a seed, contains higher energies, and you water it by giving it your attention. So I'll say the mantra one time, and in the next three, we can say it together as a group. This mantra is spelled O-M, Om. All together, on the next exhalation, make the sound of the mantra Om all together. Last time we say the mantra, be aware if there's any thoughts disturbing you, distracting you, let your whole attention go into the mantra and away from any distracting thoughts. On the exhale, just sit with your eyes closed for another 30 seconds and feel how the vibration has gone through your body and mind. And note any experience you've had from looking inwardly for a few minutes. Feel your fingers, wiggle them around a little bit. Slowly open your eyes, come back into the room. Welcome back to planet Earth. So, before I go to the next section and talk a little bit more about the science of mantra meditation. Just hear any reflections you have from the experience of taking a few minutes to go inwardly. And what did you feel? What was the experience? Yes. Now, we're going to get the microphone to you within 4.5 seconds or less, or your money back from this here.
More relaxed.
More relaxed. Did you notice when you started relaxing that you were tense before you started to relax? Sometimes we hold it in and we don't know exactly how much tension we actually have until we take a moment to relax. Thank you. What other reflections do you have from the experience? You're the experiencer, so that's why I'm asking you. You're conscious living beings. You have time to experience something. Yes?
I was here, but I was not here.
Okay. Was that good? Okay. She's right over here. Keep your hands up, and we'll give the mic to you.
I tried to visualize what you asked, the door to the inner self, and I could not see anything.
Hard to get in there, right?
It was dark.
Yeah. Okay. And what about when we were doing the mantra together?
That was good. I think I was consciously with, no thoughts, just saying the word Om.
Saying the word Om. Okay, yeah, great. Thank you for sharing. It's good to know what's going on. If we take a look, we can, if you jump on a wild horse and you don't care where you're going, you won't notice anything. But if you actually want to go in a certain direction, you'll think, oh, this horse has a mind of its own. And when we do start practicing focus and looking inwardly and noticing the difference between us and our thoughts, then we'll notice how many thoughts we actually have, the ways in which we get distracted very easily and so forth. Take two more. What happened during the last session? Sharing means caring. Yes?
I felt like all of the limbs were energized. I could feel the energy flowing while directing my attention to those parts
okay.
of the body.
Nice. Well, it's a fact that there's energy flowing through our body all the time, but I'm not always aware of it. Sometimes, if you noticed your hand, when we talk about it, you notice the hand actually has a lot of energy, but I don't notice it all the time. I'm projecting myself outwardly, and I forget about the energy that's going within. One more? Yes.
So I actually joined late, but I was here when you were chanting Om. And while that was happening, it felt like my brain was actually not thinking, and the Tanpura was resonating. And it felt, my brain felt like it was at peace because it was not thinking. Like I could realize that it was not thinking and was
kind of a relief, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you had a unique perspective also because you walked in the room and you're able to, see halfway through that everyone else is in a meditative state. There's a different sound vibration going on in here, and then you joined in.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. All right. So, from the perspective of the wisdom texts, they ask us to find out who we are. I mean, we have various identities. If someone asks me who I am, I'll say, I'm from Lafayette, California, my parents are such and such. But there's a deeper identity that we have. And the way that it's talked about in the wisdom literatures is that the body that we have now, which includes the physical body, means it's got levers and pulleys and pumps and everything like that. It's very mechanical, biomechanical, mechanical nonetheless. And we also have kind of software within that runs it, which is like the mind and the intellect. And together, these gross and subtle energies are called the field. And we, the conscious being who's aware of the field, who's within the field, is called the knower of the field. So when you describe it in these terms, it gives a little perspective. Not that I simply accept the life situation that I'm in as this is me, and let me say what I mean by that. We have a life situation right now, don't we? Anybody have any situations going on in their life? If you think about it now, you have a lot going on. You have relationships that need attention. You have projects that you're working on that you're absorbed in, and your brain's working on them all the time. And we have, if you inventory everything, a lot of details to our life situation. But the yogic texts distinguish the difference between my life, which is what we are trying to take a look at for a second there, as being different from my life situation. The life situation is constantly changing, but who I am as the observer of that, it doesn't change. It's the steady place where I can find some actual foundation in my life. And as I said before, the being aware of our awareness actually energizes us and gives us the ability to deal more with our life situation, because we have a more realistic perspective. For instance, if you go to a movie and you sit down and the room goes dark, the lights come on the screen, and then what happens next? Help me out. Watching a movie. There's still movie theaters, right? I was driving back from Sacramento. I saw there were even still drive-in movies. So what happens when the light goes on the screen and you're watching? You what? Your attention goes there. And like, what might happen if you're watching a really good movie? You might enter into the movie, kind of like emotionally get absorbed in it. Possible? Maybe you start getting tense? Possible? Maybe, could you cry? Ever cry in a movie? Come on. Can admit it. So in a similar way, we might look at our life situation, which is described very much like a movie. And I get absorbed in it and I think, oh, now it's time to cry. Look at what just happened. Or now I'm joyful because something apparently fortuitous happened to me and so forth. But in the wisdom text, said this is ephemeral. It's always changing from one thing to the next. And coming back and seeing that I'm actually the knower of the field, I'm the one observing all this, this gives me a steady position to work from. So now, we talk about mind over matter, but there's actually a way in which the conscious self becomes aware of the field and becomes aware of the mind and how it's working, and then takes the position of being the observer and is not carried away by the mind, by the life situation. And this is when one comes in contact with one's own consciousness, one's own awareness. In one of the great wisdom texts of the world, there's a conversation between the teacher and the student, and the student asks, what is the symptom of somebody who's fixed in consciousness? And the teacher answers, prajahati yadakaman sarvan parta manogatan atman yeva manatushta stita prajnas tadochite. So, stita prajna means somebody who's fixed in consciousness. They're actually centered, balanced. And the description is, prajahati, the person is able to distance him or herself from the myriad thoughts and desires that are constantly churning in the mind. If you notice when you're doing a little introspection, that actually the mind is constantly producing different ideas. For instance, did I wear the right thing today? How do I look? Am I 5 pounds overweight? Or what about those 20 emails I still have to answer by the end of the day? Any of this sound familiar? Thank you for helping me out. And on it goes. The mind is constantly churning like that. So this is called manogatan. Mano means mind, and gata means going. And it's described to be like a little factory. The mind is constantly producing combinations and permutations of different ideas, desires, and things that we've seen and taken in. It absorbs them and puts them in different combinations And as if on a conveyor belt, they're coming out one after another, one after another. But prajahati means a person who's fixed in consciousness isn't obligated to grab onto each one of those things, but simply notices that the mind's working and doesn't become carried away by it. And in such a situation, atma nivatmana. So atma, please say atma. Atma means the self. And there's a distinction between, again, the field and the knower of the field. So the knower of the field is called the atma. And the atma then finds atma nivatmana tushta. Please say tushta. It's a nice word because it means satisfaction. Kind of feels like that too, doesn't it? Say it again. Tushta. You feel satisfied. So where does the satisfaction come from? It comes from the self, the higher self, that's not the field, that's not the life situation, becoming aware of itself. And that doesn't happen very often because I'm so externally focused, I'm so much absorbed in my life situation. And this is called abhinibheshita, which means total absorption in the life situation with absolutely no awareness of my actual conscious self. So when one becomes connected through the mantra, and I'll say how that happens, through the mantra meditation with one's higher self, even if for a moment, one gains a different perspective and gets, very importantly, some tushta, some satisfaction. So have you ever heard the admonition, don't shop when you're hungry? Did you ever do it?
Yes.
Accidentally? How did it go? How'd that work out for you? So you go in the store and you think, I need everything. I need two carts to push around, right? So in a similar way, if I move about the world without feeling a little inner satisfaction, this tushta, being aware of my higher self, then I tend to grab on to all kinds of things that I don't need. All desires coming off my mind, I have to have that, I have to do this. And this is a state of abhinibheshita, which is, it's full of a fear, and it also is full of anxiety. So in order to come to that steady state that's beyond fear, anxiety, one has to step out of the maelstrom of the mind's worries, anxieties, different desires and so forth, and just have a momentary experience, at least, of one's higher self. And then, atmanyivatmanatushta, if you can taste that happiness of just being and not having or wanting to go somewhere. A phrase that I use again and again is, what you are is more important than what you have. I'll say it one more time. What you are is more important than what you have. Could you please repeat it back to me?
What you are is more important than what you have.
Could somebody say what that means in the context of our conversation so far? Who would like to wax philosophical and give it a hack? Yes, right here in the front row.
So, what you are is going to be like a constant thing. You know, you know what you are, and you know that's kind of a constant thing which gonna go forever till we are here. But what we have is can change. It's like our desires and you know what mind wants or like what you want to achieve. Like, you know, those things are gonna constantly keep changing. So having is what we're gonna have is like a temporary thing, but what we are is like a permanent.
I really like that. Give him a hand. That was really well put. And in the wisdom literatures, what you are, it's called, and seeing what you are as compared to what you have is called tattva. So tat is a demonstrative pronoun. It means you're pointing to something and saying that. Actually, it's cognate in English. The word tat in tattva is cognate to that. So if you say that, it means I'm pointing to something that actually exists. So the idea is to understand what part of you actually is permanent, what exists. And that means tattva. Sometimes people say tattva is translated as truth, that thing that actually has substance. And sometimes we get it opposite. So you think, oh, the idea of being a spiritual being, that's kind of amorphous, wispy, like almost like ghostly kind of thing. And the body's the real thing. But actually, the Vedas put it the other way around. body's just a temporary thing. Like a river is constantly moving, changing, right? Nearby we have a few rivers. One of them's the Russian River. And let's just say you went there on a hot day and you put your feet in the Russian River to cool off. And then you came back an hour later and put your feet back in the river, in the Russian River. What is your name?
Me?
Kanapriya.
Kanapriya?
Yes. Kanapriya, did you put your feet back in the same river?
No.
Oh, she said no. Let's hear what she, how she can defend that.
Well, it's changing. It's moving, like with time. So it's not exactly the same thing. But yeah, conceptually, on a higher level, it's the same.
We call it the same thing, right? We say that's the Russian River. But actually, if we look at it from a different perspective, it's not the same at all. 1 second to the next, it's constantly changing.
Yes.
So this is the perspective that the wisdom literatures give. They say the body, very much like a river, is constantly changing. In fact, you can calibrate this. You can see every 7 years, every cell in your body is different. And from day to day, you know, the skin's coming off. Not to be too graphic here, but I mean, it's a fact. The things that we consider, my face and this and that, it can all be changed. It's very malleable, in fact, and it's constantly changing. But that tut that you can actually point to and say, that actually exists. It's not going to go anywhere. That doesn't change. It's called tattva. It has thatness or existence to it. That's yourself. And that's what you can come in contact with through the higher vibration of the mantra in meditation. How's that so far? Okay, at least this is my thesis, and I'll keep developing it as we go along. So the power of sound. Who's heard of ultrasound? What's it used for sometimes? Very commonly.
Medical.
Yeah, medical. Like, what's one of the main things that people look at that they can't see with their eyes?
Baby,
yeah. So it's kind of like, I saw the baby, and it's in there. It's like, you didn't see it before, right? But now you saw it with the ultrasound. What about sonar? Who knows about sonar? Where do you use that a lot? In the water, like submarines, they put sonar. So what do they see using sonar? They may see other submarines. They may see rock formations, mountains underwater, and things like that. They didn't see with their eyes. You can't see that far, but you saw it. And similarly, mantra is a kind of sounding that you put out, and it resonates with your higher self. So what you couldn't see with your eyes before, just as you couldn't see what's under the water, you couldn't see what's in the mother's belly until you used the sound vibration, it gave you a reading. Similarly, it's very difficult, as you were pointing out, to come to a state of experiencing your higher self, actually seeing it. But the theory behind mantra is that the mantra has a resonance that will resonate with your higher self. And you'll be able to experience it or see it for yourself. You with me so far? Just say yes.
Yes.
Okay, thanks. All right. Now, did I misspell that? What do you think? Any editors in here? Do you think I misspelled it? I did, but on purpose. You are here. You've heard this. You are here. Where do you see that?
Maps.
You go to the mall, you look at the map, it says you are here. That helps, doesn't it? So you are here is a play, obviously, on this idea of sound vibration and finding yourself. Not only that, you are here means whatever you listen to, whatever vibration you're accustomed to either exposing yourself to or whatever vibrations you choose will develop your consciousness. This is what's presented in the wisdom literatures. The most important element that you're around that determines your state of consciousness, and your state of consciousness will then determine your environment and your life and your ability to move in various ways, is sound vibration, the kind of sound that you listen to. Therefore, you are here. You are what you hear, just as much as you are what you, what else we say? You are what you
eat.
Is that true? I mean, if you go stock up on Reese's peanut butter cups and you feast on them for the next 30 days, how are you going to feel?
Happy.
Happy. Okay. Well, your body might change a little bit, right? Yeah, and so forth. We know that. And in a similar way, on a subtle level, the sound we listen to will affect our consciousness very profoundly. And the diet of sound that we allow ourselves or that we enter into will have a profound effect on us. So you are here. So conscious listening is conscious living. And I put the arrow both ways. This is what the wisdom literatures say determines our ability to be conscious in our life. And this is nice to know, actually, because it's something that anyone can adjust. It's not beyond our grasp to be able to adjust to what we listen to. And so this is the great art of listening. So there's different kinds of vibrations. Let's just say that you had a hard day and you came home, and in order to kind of get away from your feeling a little morose, let's just say you place yourself in your favorite chair in front of the television and you just turn it on. Does it make you feel better? That you could, it goes with the Reese's peanut butter cups, right? So it may put you in a mindless state for a little while, but actually you're introducing more and more images that are sort of random, and a lot of them are chosen on television just to kind of stimulate your mind to maybe buy something or maybe to look at the next article or something like that. But if you intentionally, for instance, went into a meditative state, you took a few minutes to listen to a spiritual sound, it would help you to balance, to recenter, to get a perspective which would help you to cope with the current life situation that you might be dealing with, and to help to rectify it in a very profound way. And that would just be entry level, talking about entry level effects of the mantra. So choosing transcendental sound or material sound. Now, I told you I'd make a profound statement later on, and this is it. Consider just for a moment what assets you have in your life. Are you thinking about it? Are you counting them up? What are some of them? Anybody thinking finances? Yeah. How about, you know, property? Friendships? Parents? All these things, right? Okay. Every single thing that you just thought of, sooner or later, you won't have at some point. I hate to break this to you, but it's just true. Everything that we might count up as an asset right now, we're going to lose. It's somehow it's going to slip out of our fingers. You don't get to keep it. Now let me tell you the one asset, if you boil everything down, the one asset that you have now, right this second, and that you always have and always will have. Will you allow me that? Should I say it? I'm not convinced.
Yes.
All right. It's your choice of where to place your attention. Let me propose that actually what we are is units of attention. We saw for a minute in our guided meditation that you can choose to look inwardly, can direct your mind to go this way or that. You can put your attention on your hand or your foot or your head. That you can decide at any second. Just as right now, you can decide that you'll turn your attention somewhere else. So what we actually are units of attention, and we have the choice where to place our attention. That's our main freedom in life, or I would say only freedom. But that's extremely consequential. And here's a mantra for you. Where attention goes, energy flows. Please repeat. Yeah, wherever you place your attention in your life, your energy is going to go in that direction. And not only that, the wisdom literature say if you place your attention on inferior sounds, if you place your attention in frivolous things, that's where your energy is going to go. That's where you end up. But if you place it in a higher level, if you put your attention on a higher level of sound vibration, then you're going to go there. Your energy is going to go there. So as units of attention, we have attention. We have the choice where to put our attention at any minute. So this is one of the reasons that meditation by mantra or sound vibration is very powerful, is this principle of acoustic resonance. Everything in the world has a certain vibration. And when it's combined with another vibration, it reaches its maximum potential. And this is true in physical objects everywhere. If I put a wine glass here and we invited an opera singer with a trained voice, and this is true, actually, research, it's not an urban myth, he or she could make a certain pitch with the voice and break the wine glass. Have you ever seen it done? Well, you can look it up online. it's because it reached a certain level of vibration due to an outside force that came to it, and it resonated at that level. So the kinds of things that we listen to will resonate with different parts of our existence. The lower sound vibration resonates with the field, but the higher vibration of the mantra resonates with the knower of the field, or the conscious self. And that's where happiness comes from, resonating with your higher self and realizing your higher self. So, tuning your mind to the mantra. There are various ways to do that, and I'm going to go into them in a second, realizing that we're running down on time, but I want to take a couple of reflections before we finish with a couple of, I'm going to teach you a couple of mantras and a couple of ways in which you can make voluntary lifestyle changes, we call them VLCs, in order to be more resonant with the mantra. But at anything that you heard so far, please reflect back to me, because it helps to augment the thought and bring the conversation to a wider level. What did you hear?
It's like we have some folks on the bridge. Over.
On the bridge, it sounds like Star Trek.
So one of the reflections is about the passing waters and putting the feet. The reflection is you cannot touch the same water twice because the flow has passed, will never pass again. And
yes? Want to give one more?
Yeah, and there is a question that if we only see our higher self a few times, how can we be sure it's not changing?
Oh, well, there's certain things that are self-evident, and this is a very important point, because in any system of knowledge, as Aristotle said, you have to have self-evident knowledge. Just as when you do geometry, you have to have an equation that you start with as a given. Otherwise, you don't have anything. But there is such a thing as self-evident knowledge. And when you see your higher self, when you experience it, then there's a knowing. Just like you know you exist, right? Please say yes. But you can't prove it. There's no way without circular reasoning that you can prove it. You can hold up your hand and say, I exist because see, here's my hand. But that's circular reasoning. You exist because you know you exist. How do you know? You just know. There are certain things that you know because they're self-evident. And the consciousness is one of them. It's self-evident, just like the sun. When the sun rises, you go like, there's the sun. Well, how do you prove it? It's right there. It just it's providing light. So similarly, your consciousness is providing light throughout your whole body. And if you experiment with your own conscious awareness, you'll notice that it's dynamic. It's very different from matter, and you can see for yourself. One more that's not on the bridge. Just a reflection. Anything you heard that stuck in your mind? Yes. She's right there. Raise your hand so she can.
You are what you hear.
You are here.
Yeah.
Right.
I think there is also another fun, maybe not intended, but of being in the present.
Yes.
Kind of.
Good.
I mean, that would be the actual.
I like it.
I think we hear a lot of bullshit around us that we don't actually have to pay attention to, but we do.
The tidal wave.
Right.
That's what George Harrison said.
Energy flow thing.
Yes, definitely. Tidal waves of that of noise coming in, and taking time to tune your mind to the mantra, tune your body to the mantra, tune your life environment, your environment around you to the mantra, is actually dynamic. and can bring you to higher states of awareness and peace of mind. All these kinds of things that we hear about, talk about, they're practically cliche, you can attain. Thank you. That was very helpful. Okay, so tuning your mind to the mantra. And here are a few mantras, because I want you to be able to take them away with you. We did one, right? Om. Now, you might say, what's in the one syllable? Well, you also might say, what's in a seed? And I mentioned this like a seed. It happened to, when I was in India recently, I brought a seed back from a tamarind tree. And somebody gave me a tamarind pod and said, here, eat this. And I ate it. It was sour and nice. And then I brought the seed home, and I planted it. And I thought, well, what could happen? Maybe it could sprout. 2 weeks, 3 weeks, nothing. I thought, oh, well, at least I tried. And then 4 weeks later, this huge sprout came out of the pot. And now it's like a little tree. And it's a miracle. Every day I go there and marvel at that. It's like, how did that happen? I had a portable little pod. I brought it with me, and then I put it in the ground. I put some water, and I put a little light, made sure it had light and it has air. And lo and behold, it grew. It grew into something. And it'll give its own seeds. Now, one of the greatest teachers of mantra meditation was named Chaitanya. He lived 500 years ago in India. He went all over India and taught people the system of mantra meditation. There are many of his descendants through disciplic lines all over the world now who are practicing the kinds of mantra meditation that he taught. And he gave this metaphor that we're all gardeners. And we have a field to work with. And when you plant the right seeds and give the water and air and light, then it will grow into something magnificent. And so the seed is the mantra. And how do you water it? Mostly with your attention. Bring your attention back to the mantra. So we did Om. And did you like it?
Yes.
One syllable mantra? Okay. And then here are a couple other mantras you can take away. So just sit up for a minute again. And if you like, you can close your eyes. I'll say the mantra one time, and then we'll do it together three times. And again, just bring your attention back to the syllables of the mantra. Ra-ma. Ra-ma. Together three times. Rama, Rama, Rama. Now if you'll bring your attention back to the screen. Three mantras I'm giving today. This one, Gauranga. It's four syllables, but it's pronounced Gauranga. So close your eyes again. I'll do one, we'll do three together. Gauranga. Together. Gauranga. 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 These are three very powerful mantras that you can use in your own meditation. And I gave you a little bit of the technique and a little more explanation. In scientific theory, excitation means that you bring a higher energy to an entity, and that lower entity becomes enlivened by it. It becomes lifted up because it takes on the energy. So when you bring the mantra into your consciousness, you'll get this effect called excitation, and we call, actually it's a scientific term, higher energy states. And you'll notice when you bring the mantra and the mantra meditation, if you do it regularly, it means at least try it once a day for a week, you'll start to notice the effect of the mantra bringing higher energy into your consciousness, and that will radiate out into your life. And then finally, VLCs, my favorite thing. Everyone say VLCs.
VLCs.
Voluntary life changes. This is what's exciting about being a human being, because you can make your own list at any time of voluntary lifestyle changes. And why not change your life? You can reinvent yourself. You can always improve. So voluntary lifestyle changes can be in form of habits that you have. You can change them. They can be in form of attitude that you have. And these kinds of lifestyle changes will make you a better resonator when you learn the various lifestyle changes and you improve yourself to give up lower habits and develop higher ones. Then the mantra resonates more profoundly. VLCs, habits, association, I didn't mention, but there it is. Whomever you associate with, you'll become like, and you'll develop their vibration. And so tune your life to higher frequency. And finally, turn your transponder on. Just the idea of the mantra that you're putting it out there to the universe came to me in a very profound way. I oftentimes, especially during certain months, I sit in my backyard garden and practice my mantra meditation early in the morning. And one day, I had been sitting there for a while, and I felt overcome with melancholy because I was thinking about the Malaysian airline jet. I had heard about it, how it went off course, and it had been lost. And nobody ever found it. And the reports I heard were that it was not found because the transponder wasn't on. Apparently it's a little electronic device that puts out a signal that can be picked up from far away so people can tell where you are, where the plane is. They were never found. And when I was sitting there thinking what it would be like to be so far off course without any connection to anybody who knows how to find you, I started thinking of myself like that in a vast universe. And what is my existential situation? And I thought, I need to turn my transponder on. And as I was saying my mantra, I was saying it with a lot more emotion, a lot more feeling that here I am, please, asking the higher powers to come and rescue me from this situation I'm in. And when you chant and do your mantra with some kind of feeling like that, awareness of the fact that I'm lost, and how can I triangulate? How can I find my center and not be carried away by the unlimited distractions of the world and the life situation that I'm absorbed in? Then the mantra becomes a very profound way of connecting to your higher self. So we now are officially out of time. However, and you're all very busy people, you have things to do. If you like to stay afterwards for a few minutes, we're going to make a circle here, and we're going to do a little bit more explication of the process of mantra meditation, just in case you want to start a home practice and you want more information or you want to ask a few more questions, we can do that. Does that sound okay? So in other words, you're free to go. And you're also free to stay for a few minutes afterwards. And I thank you very much for giving your attention today. It's been a profound experience for me being with all of you. Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here. And Shikadasa, again, you've provided so much inspiration and guidance. I'm certainly taking away a lot. And thank you all for being in the audience and making this an experience for everyone. Because you being here, just sitting down and listening, and even if you had a chance to talk, just makes it an experience that everyone will have something to take away from. So thank you. Please help yourself to snacks and continue to stay as we go into the second part if you'd like to. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for joining us on the bridge as well. We look forward to our next event, and we'll send you and bye on the bridge.
Battery 100%. Connected to iPhone.
Okay. Come on up, there's more seats. It's more powerful when you're in a circle. Not that this is a perfect circle or anything, but we do what we can. So yeah, in Silicon Valley, every Saturday morning, there's a place where we invite people to come, and we have kind of early in the morning, it's 6 a.m., it's right around sunrise. we have a circle where many people come together and do this mantra meditation together. And you get the energy from the others. First of all, the intentionality of it is very important. Is everybody comfortable? There's more seats over here. You can come on in. Don't feel left out. You come closer too. Somehow that chair is blocking you. Yeah. Yeah, one of the great secrets to advancement in life, be in the right place at the right time and move in as close as you can. So, yeah, thanks for staying. So, this, if you find others that do mantra meditation, you can actually chant together. It's very helpful because, as I was saying, the intentionality really brings you along. I noticed that for our session on Saturday mornings, a lot of people come. Normally, they would have slept past that, or they would have maybe done something else, but because everybody else is doing it, there's a kind of attraction, you know, to want to be there in the circle. If you're by yourself and you're doing mantra meditation, one of the practical aspects of this in order to develop a steady home practice is what's called Sankhya Purvaka, which means numerical strength. And mantras are countable, means that you can count how many mantras you do. And there are many, actually, ways that people do that. Can you pass me my blue bag, please? Thank you. Cultures around the world have these, these are like prayer beads. Mine has 108 beads on it. And, you know, you can, a lot of people wear them. I saw somebody wearing them around their wrist. And these are traditionally for counting how many mantras that you do. And the reason that helps is the mind generally changes from day to day, week to week, or even from the night to the morning. And so in a practice of mantra meditation, you would start by making a determination of how many mantras that you're going to do every day. And one of the ways to count them is on some beads, or actually, if you get a little hand counter, I might have one in my pocket because I generally carry one with me for when I can't hold on to my beads. But this counts units of anything, but why not mantras? You know, sometimes people see me on a plane or something like that. What are you doing? What are you counting? And I said, I'm counting my blessings. There's a lot. So counting mantras is helpful. It sounds counterintuitive because, like, how is that spiritual, counting anything? But actually, it helps to keep your mind on track because the mind is rather childish and wants to run off and do its own thing. But if you keep it in the discipline, then you can have shift. You can have breakthroughs. Many breakthroughs lead to shifts in life. And so if you want to test the theory of mantra, then test it on yourself and try it out for a period of time. I would suggest writing it down and saying, this is how many mantras I'm going to do a day for a certain amount of time. And it doesn't have to be a huge number. But you'll notice that just doing it intentionally every day and bringing your mind to focus on the mantra itself will have an effect on the rest of your life anyway. Just the intentionality of focusing your mind and saying, hey, there's something in here. It's not all out here. There's something here that I have to attend to, and taking care of it will have a really profound effect. There's the idea of pronunciation. You simply pronounce the mantra and listen to it as you speak it. And in any meditation, you want to have a place to bring your attention to. So, for instance, in Vipassana meditation, it's exclusively or pretty much mostly on the breath. You're keeping your mind on the breath and bringing it back there. And we started with that a little bit. You can see breath is a powerful place because it's very steady, and you can get in the practice of watching your breath. Then you can practice bringing it to the mantra, your mind to the mantra. And so I mentioned the principle of excitation. The mantra is bringing something to the meditation. Your breath may be bringing a little something, but the mantra is a vibration that has a kind of effect on us that lifts us up. And again, that theory is to be tested. You have to see it for yourself and see if it's actually true or not. But that's what people document by practicing mantra and listening to it. Now, let's just see if you have any questions about the practice of mantra meditation before I go into more detail. Oh, people okay. Still on the bridge. Great.
Yeah. Use the mic.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And keep it like right here. I know it's hard. But. Okay, go ahead.
So when I try to meditate, which I try, I find it. Everyone says that they feel better after. My head hurts. It's, I don't know if it's just from like lack of focus or trying very hard to focus. Is that normal?
I don't know that it's normal, but I would just say that it's not a bad thing to become aware of the effects of meditation and how they affect you individually. It's just it's not that the very practice of taking the time to look and see what's going on, and then seeing what the effects are over time is helpful. You know, you can work it out. But I haven't heard that a lot, but I've heard a lot of different things. I mean, the main thing that people say is it's really hard to control the mind.
Right.
First of all, you know, as soon as I sit down, there's a voice saying, get back up. You're like, who said that? And it's kind of interesting, because as I was mentioning the conversation between the student and the teacher about who's in fixed consciousness, and the teacher is giving this description of how a person can actually sit. It's not that that's the only thing you can do when you're in a meditative state or that when you're centered, but the fact is that you can be aware that, hey, I could sit down and feel happy. Because the sense is that I'm satisfied, I have enough right now, and the sense of I have to get up and go somewhere is like I have to fill a hole somewhere. I have to patch something up that needs patching. But, yes, go ahead, please.
So, I guess, is it normal to like keep having thoughts? I can't stop my thoughts from coming.
No, it's not about stopping thoughts at all. And it's according to the yoga scriptures, it's not possible to stop your thoughts. It's not something because we have volition, and it means that we generate desires. We have things that we're going to do, and the energy. We're not dead stones, so it's not all of a sudden you become nothing. But we can distinguish between what are external thoughts that are related to the field and what is that actual are the radiance of our own consciousness. We become aware of the difference between those two things. And you can become absorbed in your own conscious self. And that's, there's a difference between the two. They're in a different level. Thought energy can be on a lower level, and it's very disturbing. As I described at Bini Beishita, it's absorption in your life situation, which drags you away from your awareness of yourself and your higher self. I hope that wasn't too abstract. Any other thoughts or questions? Yes.
I would like to return to the mantra.
Here comes the microphone.
I would like to return to the mantras, and the question that popped in my mind is, how do you choose one?
Well, the mantras that I've passed on today are ones that have been passed down through many generations of teachers. Of course, there are mantras here, there, and everywhere, all around the world, but it's kind of like, you know, how do you choose a doctor? You find out somebody has a good reputation. That studied science of medicine. They actually have a diploma on their wall. And then they'll say, okay, here's some medicine. Sometimes the mantras themselves are called ashaudi, which means in Sanskrit medicine. They have a curative effect. So if you get them from a reputable source, from somebody who's actually practicing, and they look like they're, from their lifestyle, that they've cured themselves and so forth, this is one of the ways of accepting mantras. So I pass on the mantras that I've received from my teacher, and that I looked into the kind of where is the source.
Yeah, but you already gave us three, so which is more than one.
Yeah. Yeah, I did it as sort of a, you know, when you get a, sometimes people give you a box of chocolates, and it's like got different kinds in it. You know, it's not all one because you haven't decided yet exactly which one you want. So for the sake of being kind of like ecumenical and more, you know, variety of, I don't like to say, you know, just take this. I'm just showing an overview of what mantras are and that there are a variety of mantras. But as you move forward, you can decide, you know, this is the mantra that I'd like to work with and stick with. Hope that helps. Okay, from the bridge, and then we'll just practice a little more mantra.
So from the bridge, I feel like I doze off and then wake up myself when I'm meditating. Is this expected?
Well, it happens a lot, but don't fall asleep. Because sleeping is not necessarily a meditative state. It's called swapna, and it means being carried away by a kind of a lower energy. So it's not recommended that you sleep when you meditate. And so there are different ways of staying more aware and alert. So one of them is to make sure you get enough sleep at night. And this is very important. Even, you know, modern science, a lot of studies showing now people have been, there's sort of bravado over the last few decades, like I barely sleep at all, I just work all day. It's not really helpful ultimately. It's actually better to get enough sleep because your brain needs it. And for yogis, those who are practicing meditation every day, they go to sleep on time and wake up on time. So, it's a hard thing to do in today's world because there's so much artificial light and so many other attractions. But if you can do that, and that's one of the voluntary lifestyle changes I talked about, it changes your whole ability to resonate with the mantra. Is get enough sleep and get up early enough to chant the mantra at the right time. Morning time is the best. In fact, 1 hour, 45 minutes before the sun comes up, if you want to calculate that, is the ideal time. It's called Brahma Muhurta, and it's a period of time that sort of is an opening. When you chant the mantra at that time, you'll have a lot more clarity and breakthrough experiences. Another one from the bridge.
Is there any way to identify when you have connected with your higher self during or after meditation?
When you see it, you'll know it. Generally, the symptoms are described even in the preliminary stage. It's not that all of a sudden that you may have, you know, this profound experience that changes everything in your life, but it may be very subtle. And it's compared to when the sun is coming up in the morning. First of all, you see the sun rays. It's not that, you know, the sun is the first thing that pops up, but you'll notice that things are changing around you. Like, it's very subtle, especially if you get up an hour and 45 minutes before the sun rises. And you'll notice the whole environment changes because the energy of the sun starts coming in before the sun globe actually shows up. So you'll notice animals know it way ahead of time. I went out by myself in the woods camping several years ago, and it was really early in the morning. I was in a tent, and all the animals started coming alive. I was thinking, there's no sun, you know, you guys go back to sleep. But they could feel the energy of it coming up already, because they're more attuned to the environment. And then gradually, even I could feel it. It was like barely there, but things are changing, and you feel that kind of light energy coming in, and you start to see things you didn't see before, and because of the light of the sun. And then when it comes up, you know, there it is, it just happened. It's actually a profound experience that we tend to miss every day, because we're, you know, get the sun out of my eyes, trying to make it down to the 101 freeway to be on time to work. And, you know, we don't resonate with the profound cosmic thing that's actually happening right now. Nature's not speaking to me because I'm not, well, it's speaking, but I'm not listening so much. So the mantra, too, we'll notice subtle changes. For instance, you might notice at some periods in your life that you're irritable. Is that possible? Anyone? You know, like someone says something, it's like, I told you last time, you know. I'm not grouchy. So, you know, this comes from a place of frustration I have within myself. It's not because of any external thing. It's how I'm reacting to the external world because of what I'm holding in here. And when you have these kinds of experiences that the person on the bridge was asking about, then there, you'll notice in yourself an ability to deal more reasonably and not overreact to things that happen in the world. And this is called vairagya. Vairagya means a natural perspective you start to get. It's like, what's important, what's not important? You're thinking in a bigger way because you're centered, as I started the conversation. You feel more centered. So you don't overreact to little things. And this is one of the signs that the mantra is working, as it's bringing this higher energy states, HES. It's a kind of excitation. The mantra is bringing more energy and light that you're getting. Hope that helps. Okay. So let's try a couple more mantras. And if you'll just sit up a little more than you were before, just like at a job interview. If you go for the job interview and you're like this, they immediately start thinking like this person's not interested. But it's an interesting phenomenon that when you sit up a little straighter before you chant your mantra, then your nervous system kind of comes into focus. It's like, what are we going to do? Something important, right? And then the next thing is to enunciate. And so when you say the mantra, just repeat it the way it's written. So let's try the mantra Rama. And so I'll say Rama. Everyone say.
Rama.
Yeah. This mantra actually means it's referring to and actually connects you with the wellspring of spiritual happiness. So that kind of happiness we're looking for that's inside, when you say the word Rama, it resonates with that spiritual side of you where you're naturally happy. You don't have to have anything, be anywhere, attain anything, win an award. You're just happy for no reason. And this is what Rama taps into. So if you say Rama. So now I'm going to teach you a technique to chant on your hands. So hold up your right hand and place your thumb on the middle portion of your ring finger like this and say Rama 1.
Rama.
Now place it on the bottom of your ring finger, say Rama 2.
Rama 2.
Place it on the bottom of your little finger, say Rama 3.
Rama 3.
Middle of your little finger, say Rama 4.
Rama 4.
Top of your little finger, say Rama 5.
Rama 5.
Top of your ring finger, say Rama 6.
Rama 6.
Top of your middle finger, say Rama 7.
Rama 7.
Top of your index finger, Rama 8.
Rama 8.
Middle of your index finger, say Rama 9.
Rama 9.
Bottom of your index finger, say Rama 10.
Rama 10.
Now let's just do it quickly in succession. Rama 1, Rama 2, Rama 3, Rama 4, Rama 5, Rama 6, Rama 7, Rama 8, Rama 9, Rama 10. So this is a way to keep track of your mantras if you don't like to invest in paraphernalia or carry it around. If you've got a free hand lying around, you can just use that. And so now let's practice doing 10 Ramas together. And just be aware that you're chanting. Be aware that you're aware that you're chanting. And also be aware if your mind runs off someplace else, don't judge it, don't freak out. Just come right back to the mantra and keep going until we get to 10. Any questions before we start? Okay, you can close your eyes too. That way you're not self-conscious or anything like that. And you can just follow my lead. I'm gonna give us the middle C. I'll do one, and then you can join in on the next one, which will be the first mantra. Rama, 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 10 more. Rama, Rama.
Rama, 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 Rama.
Now just sit for a minute and feel how the vibration has gone through your body. And come back into the room, you can open your eyes. You might notice also that it lends well to your breath, you're breathing in and out when you're doing the mantra. So there's a kind of a breath control that takes place when you're doing your mantra. And if you find a place in your house where you can be undisturbed, or you know, if you take a break here at Intel and go to a place where you can be a little bit in seclusion and turn off your electronic devices so they don't call to you when you're doing your mantra, and just be absorbed in the sound of the mantra, which will resonate with your higher self, you'll find shift in your life through this process of chanting the mantra. You'll find shift because it has its own effectiveness. So before we part and go off into our own mantra chanting, does anybody have any last reflections or questions? Yes.
What does the last mantra mean,
Gauranga? Gauranga means to be connected to the source of all nourishment. Like, you know, we're all being maintained. Like, remember when I talked about the breath? And, you know, it's going on all the time. We're being nourished by our environment. The breath is sustaining us. I barely ever think of it. But there's a nourishing aspect in this world, like a power that's maintaining us that I'm barely ever aware of. So that's one of the aspects of the mantra Gauranga, the one who nourishes, sustaining us at every second, that powerful higher force.
What's Om then?
Om is called the seed mantra. It has all the other mantras in it, but it's seed-like. And that the Om actually resonates very naturally with your higher conscious self. And you'll notice that when you do Om repeatedly, you probably won't want to stop, because you'll feel a very peaceful sensation where you're resting above the mind and the turbulence of the mind, and you're actually feeling like, wow, I'm a spiritual being. I have nothing to do with my life situation. You'll feel that from chanting Om. So we've had a little introduction to mantra, and I talked a little bit about the philosophy behind it. There's a lot more where that came from, and we intend to do a series. So if you want to come back at intervals, you can do that. Also, on the card I handed out, there's a place where I do a webinar online if you ever want to check in. That one program at the end is called Ask Vaish. That's my name for short. and we have webinars there where people come on who are practicing or want to practice, and they just ask questions, and then we can go through different questions.
Last
and
answers. Question.
Yeah.
If you're doing this at home just to get into practice,
yeah.
Would you recommend like turning on, I don't know, a video, YouTube video or something, or you know, a recorded of like people chanting together just to get.
Yeah, you can do that.
In it.
You can do that.
You can.
Yeah. If you find a external source, like I've been using this Dampura,
right.
If you find something that resonates nicely, it kind of keeps you focused.
Okay.
Thank you very much, everybody, and looking forward to seeing you again. Hope you have a fantastic month. So we'll see you next time. Thank you.